We're looking at the history and the future of the federal minimum wage law and what it does for families living on the margin. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The last time Congress passed legislation to raise the minimum wage, it was back in 2009. It's $7.25 an hour still today. President Biden campaigned on a promise to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour over 4 years. It's part of his $1.9 trillion COVID relief bill. Will he get it done? What would it do for families living paycheck to paycheck? Are you in a minimum wage job? What is your quality of life like? 800-642-1234. Economist Tim Smeeting is the Lee Rainwater Distinguished Professor of Public Affairs and Economics at the La Follette School of Public Affairs at UW-Madison. Tim, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hi, Kate. Nice to be with you.
Well, the federal minimum wage, it's a heated debate among lawmakers and people like you, economists. And on top of that, there are these conflicting studies that predict what would happen if you raise the minimum wage. So start us out, Tim, if you will, with where we are now at $7.25 and explain how that was set.
We're at $7.25. It got set actually in the Minimum Wage Act of 2007. Which increased the minimum wage in three steps to $7.25, and by 2009, we're at $7.25 an hour. Now, that was 11 years ago. That's a long time to have the minimum wage stay at the same level, and in terms of inflation-adjusted wages, it's much lower now. So the federal government couldn't do it, but 29 states and the District of Columbia and localities within states have a minimum wage now that's higher than the federal minimum. And 21 or 22 of these actually are at or above $10 an hour in 2021. Eight states are scheduled to move to $15 an hour over the next 5 and 6 years, including Florida. So the feds may not get it done. In fact, last night at 5:30 a.m. this morning, the Senate passed a relief bill that did not include the $15 an hour minimum wage. At 5:30 a.m. this morning, we won't have a national $15 an hour minimum wage for a while. But there's a lot of distance between 7.25 and $15. That's more than twice. So it's still possible that in the House, who gets the bill now, could say, why don't we go for something like 12, which would make a huge difference in Wisconsin, for instance.
Well, riddle me this. How is it possible to construct a federal baseline for wages, if you will, when earning minimum wage in a big costly city like, you know, fill in the blank, San Francisco or DC, is vastly different than earning minimum wage in rural Louisiana or small town Arkansas or Mississippi?
That's true. That is true. And many of those cities are at or near $15 an hour, like San Francisco. Even in Arkansas, let's go to rural Arkansas. Has a $10 an hour minimum wage in rural areas too. They passed that by popular vote in 2018. So in Florida, as I said, has gone to $15 an hour over the next 5 or 6 years. They've got small towns and small areas too. Now, I'm a little concerned about 15, to be quite honest with you. We would not get there right away. We would inch up over 4 or 5 or 6 years. For instance, that's what Illinois is doing now. But we certainly do need something of an increase. We need a floor somewhere for workers. And I think that would be a good thing, even if not $15 an hour.
We're talking with Tim Smeeting, who's an economist at UW-Madison. He's our guide to the federal minimum wage, past and present, what it means for poverty, what it means for living standards in America. You can join in. Workers, do you currently make minimum wage in Wisconsin? How does it affect your quality of life? What can you afford? What is completely out of reach? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Tim, so the last time that 7.25 was on the horizon here was 2009, following another time of upheaval in our economy, the Great Recession. As you view our economy at this stage in the pandemic, why is this moment the right time to raise the federal minimum wage?
Well, there was a lot of popular support for it, for instance. Over 70% of people in the country think we should raise the minimum wage. And a recent survey during the Great Recession suggests that there's even more support now than there was before. I don't see it as creating a lot of problems if we step in over the next 4 or 5 years to something like $12 or $13 an hour. I don't see that as a big problem. I think that more people will want to go to work. More people will offer more work hours. And if it's lower income people, which is 40% of the minimum wage people live in households that are poor or near poor, that's going to mean you're going to spend less on food share. You're going to spend less on public housing because as they earn more and they keep more, then the targeted program costs go down. So I think that's quite good.
Yeah, explain that construction there, that intersection. What is the minimum wage's relationship to poverty in our country and the poverty line?
Great question. Well, if you work 2,000 hours a year, 50 weeks at 40 hours a week, at 7 1/4, you'd make about $14,500 before taxes and work expenses. That's just about enough to keep one single person out of poverty. If you made $15 an hour, that's enough to support a family of four and keep them from being in poverty. So the minimum wage is really low. And if you have a child or two children, you're just not going to get out of poverty with it. But if you have a couple of children, you'll get some help from the earned income tax credit, which means that it'll subsidize your earnings up to a certain level, up to $15,000 or $20,000 a year. You might get an extra $5,000 there. So that helps too. But if people made more directly, they probably want to work longer if they could, and they might be able to. They are going to have some money directly at their own disposal. And programs like Food Share, for every dollar you earn, you would get 30 cents or so less per month in Food Share. So we'd save money in Food Share. And if you're in a public housing unit, you'd pay 20 or 30 cents more per month or per hour or per dollar, I'm sorry, of extra earnings for rent. So the minimum wage is actually much more helpful to low-income people than we think. We used to think that it's just teenagers and high-income families. That's not true anymore. Turns out that 55% of those who get the minimum wage are working full-time. And it really helps essential frontline workers like those who work in nursing homes and those who work in childcare facilities. Those are particular groups that would benefit quite a bit.
Let's bring in John now in Eau Claire, describing your situation. John, go ahead.
Thank you. I went through college for 4 years working at minimum wage. Minimum wage should be handled by the states. If Biden's plan of raising it to $15 an hour went through, it would kill jobs by the thousands, if not millions, in lower-income communities. And the minimum wage, perhaps, on a federal level, could be raised at a very low amount, but it should be left to the states. West Virginia, as an example, Missouri, even Wisconsin. It would be a job killer, and it would be very detrimental to people who lose their jobs. Yes, it would help a few people who have jobs, but job creation would be killed.
John, thank you for that. Tim, go ahead.
I differ with you, John, for a couple of reasons. First of all, according to the Congressional Budget Office, and they do a very good job on their work, that if you raise the minimum wage, they said in 2014, if you raised it to 10 and a quarter an hour, a million people would lose their job, but 30 million would get a pay increase. Last year, they said if you raise the minimum wage to $12 an hour, that about 25 million would get a raise, and less than a million would lose their job. And right across the river, it's not too far, I guess. Over there in Minnesota, if you leave it to the states, minimum wage in Minnesota today is $10.08 an hour for large employers. In Minneapolis, it's $13 an hour. for large employers. Let's go the other way. Let's go down to Illinois. It's $10 now, okay? It's going to be $11 next year. Actually, it's $11 now. It was $10 in 2020. It's $11 an hour now. And it's going to go up to 15 in by 2025. So we have left it to some states, and I predict an awful lot of people, maybe not so much in Eau Claire, you're not quite close enough to Minnesota, but people who are living in La Crosse and people who live in Kenosha, I know where they're going to go to work, and it's not going to be in Wisconsin.
Tim Smeeding is a professor of public affairs and economics at UW-Madison, breaking down this question: can raising the minimum wage to 15 an hour reduce poverty and hardship for families? What effect does the minimum wage have on poverty? Do you think the federal minimum wage is due for an increase? If so, is $15 an hour the right amount? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Tim Smeeding here on the Ideas Network. We're discussing what it would mean to more than double the federal minimum wage in America and give a pay hike to millions of low-income workers. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. Do minimum wage laws lift people out of poverty and drive productivity? Can employers find other ways to make up for paying their employees more? What should happen to the minimum wage in America? Questions we're exploring with Tim Smeeding, a distinguished professor of public affairs and economics at UW-Madison. He's with us for the hour. Let's bring in Jane now in Partyville. Hi, Jane. What would you like to say? Hi.
Good morning. I would like to comment. I work at a small library in a small community in central Wisconsin. We have a very, very tight budget. Most of our employees are retirees who are fine with working just a little bit above minimum wage. If we are forced to raise that wage to the $15 an hour, that would absolutely break the budget of this library, and we probably have to close. So there is an other side to that story. I don't know what the answer is. Trying to raise funding for libraries these days is a little difficult. So that's how the raise of the minimum wage would impact this particular library.
So, Jane, bringing up even a public service like a local library would be impacted, Tim.
Yes. And you know what, Jane? And I should have told this to John before. I think $15 an hour is too much for Wisconsin. But I don't see a problem with going to $11 or $12 an hour. If you're have a number of older workers, they could donate a few of their hours for nothing and get paid $12 an hour for two-thirds of them or something like that. I just think that $7.25 is too low. That's impossible. A lot of people don't want to work. Now, of course, it depends on what business that you're in. That's going to make a huge amount of difference. But I don't see that $15 an hour makes sense in Wisconsin. I would agree with you there.
And Tim, if you
does either.
Yeah, Tim, if you would, I mean, you've talked about surrounding states and what they're doing. What have you seen here on the home front with the minimum wage in Wisconsin?
Well, in Wisconsin, it's really led to a shortage of workers in critical care areas like elder care, or in retail services and other areas. You have to pay more than that, and the closer you live to another community that's paying a higher minimum wage, the more you're going to have to pay. And it turns out that what has been happening in Wisconsin is that Governor Evers made a proposal in 2019 to gradually raise the minimum wage to $10.50. That's $4.50 below $15. Okay. It would benefit a lot of workers. It would benefit minority workers and Latino workers. It would benefit women in particular. And it never saw the light of day in the legislature. Now, if 15 is the wrong number for Wisconsin, then it might be. I mean, Wisconsin's median wage is about $19 an hour, and our average is $23 an hour. So that would make it hard. But the idea that we couldn't go above 7.25, we couldn't get to 10, 11, or 12, doesn't make any sense to me. I just think that we could do that without any big job losses.
Let's bring in Jeffrey now in Woodbury. Hi, Jeffrey.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead. What would you like to say?
So I had to leave my old state because of cost of living versus wages. So looking at the history of it, when minimum wage was introduced and then they kept raising it to keep up with cost of living and such, it kind of stagnated in the 80s. And if it was kept up with what it was equivalent to in the 60s, it would be like over 20 an hour looking at it. While housing cost has gone up, our income has not. And that has been a huge strain on me ever since I moved out on my own.
So, Jeffrey, bringing up the rate of inflation not keeping pace, how big of an issue is that, Tim?
Well, with low inflation, it's not as big an issue. When in the 80s, inflation was a huge issue. So inflation's not that important, but it does eat away. Over 20 years, even at 2% a year, you're going to lose 20, 25% of the minimum wage. Over 10 years, you've lost probably 15, 20% of it, of its purchasing power. And you can't do a lot at 7.25 an hour. I mean, you have to take account of the cost of going to work and coming back to work. You have to take account of things like housing and your ability to afford other things. And it just seems to me that 7.25 is just too low. But come on, can we find any common ground between 15, which is more than twice 7.25? And I think we can. I think we could get to $10, $11, $12. We'd look a lot like the neighboring states other than Iowa, which is still at 7.25. And by the way, Joni Ernst led the charge to not raise the minimum wage to $15 in Congress at 5:30 a.m. this morning. So we're not going to see a $15 national minimum wage. But does it have to be 15? There's a lot of space between the two. There's a lot of room to improve the lives of workers, not cause great unemployment, not cause great dislocation of people, you know, driving across borders to go to work, and making everyone better off. I just think that there's a lot of room there and we should do that.
Tim's meeting with us, economist at UW-Madison, looking at the federal minimum wage, what it would mean to raise it for low-wage workers, lifting out of poverty, and sharing your situation and what you think about the issue. Susie is with us from Scandinavia, Wisconsin. Hi, Susie.
Hey, good morning. couple of aspects. I am actually live on a farm near a community of 800 people. What the minimum wage is in Minnesota and Illinois has nothing to do with the workforce here. The majority of small businesses here, farmers as well, are happy to stay in this area and do it on a lower income because they want to be where they are. $15 an hour here is not the same as $15 an hour in San Francisco. I think that this entire discussion has been focused on larger cities. I think that rural America has not been respected in this minimum wage situation. Employers here will simply go out of business, particularly small businesses, if they are required to double or nearly double what they are paying their employees. I think this is, look at the climate. We're losing small businesses by the handful. And now you want to slap them with a wage increase, a federal wage increase. This is the problem with trying to manage this country financially from Washington. It needs
Susie,
to be done locally.
Susie, thank you. Tim, jump in here.
Yeah. Well, Susie, I'm with you. I don't want to go to $15. But could you handle 10? You get more people working, and they would work harder. There is actually a number of good studies about what we call the efficiency wage effects of the minimum wage. If you pay people 10 or $11 an hour, instead of paying them 7.25, they stay with the same employer. They work harder, they work better, there's much less turnover, okay? You can increase their productivity by having them work with some robotics or other machinery. You can do that, okay? A wonderful study out of Berkeley showed that if you paid nursing home workers $11 an hour, people in those nursing homes, which where workers got that much pay, lived longer. They actually improved the length of life because they got better care and more continuous care and less turnover and less people who didn't show up. So I understand. I don't want to go to $15 an hour. In Wisconsin, I said that twice, and I'll say it again. But can't we go to $10 or $11 an hour?
Find a compromise. Yeah.
Yeah, why not? I mean, really.
UW-Madison economist Tim Smeeting, our guide to the implications on families with the proposed hike in the federal minimum wage. Do you think raising the minimum wage would help you address income inequality in our country? Businesses, do you already pay your employees higher than the minimum? Why do you make that choice? Join in, 800-642-1234. We'll be back after a news update with Tim Smeeting here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're discussing the proposed increase to the minimum wage and what consequences it would have on income levels, on state governments, on employers, big and small. The Biden administration says a raise would help workers. Opponents warn it would lead to job losses and price increases. Tim Smeeting watches all this as a distinguished professor of public affairs and economics at the UW-La Follette School of Public Affairs. He's our guide for the hour on the minimum wage. So, Tim, you know, would the products and services we buy, whether it's a hamburger and fries, whether it's a haircut, a cup of coffee, a hotel stay, would the cost of things become more expensive for consumers if the minimum wage would go up?
That's a great question, and that's an important question. It's pretty clear that if prices rise or if costs rise, something has to happen. Either productivity would have to rise enough to offset it, which in the short run probably isn't true. So then either goods prices would rise modestly or profits would fall modestly. Now, I happen to personally know someone who owns 12 McDonald's in central Washington, who's had to deal with the statewide minimum wage increases in the state of Washington over the last couple of years. And what he says is his McDonald's, the price of a burger rose 25 cents. But otherwise, they've been able to deal with it. They have a more reliable workforce now. People are much less likely to leave for other jobs. They've gotten a little more efficiency out of their workers. When you go into McDonald's in the state of Washington, you have to key in your order. You don't talk to a person. You click on a screen and key in your order. But they've been able to be more efficient. So he said it hasn't really hurt him at all. And that's just the way it goes. So I don't think the effects are going to be terribly great. If we went to $10 or $11 an hour, for instance, in Wisconsin, I don't see that. The trade-offs are good. There'd be 500,000 people or more who would be making more money. And again, they'd be more willing to work. More willing to work longer hours, less willing to leave and cause problems with turnover, and they'd be more productive probably. So, there's trade-offs here. But all the studies that have been out there and everything that we've seen, if you make a modest increase in the minimum wage, it helps workers way more than it raises costs, cuts profits. That's just the way it is, according to the Congressional Budget Office and others.
I want to jump in here. Let's go to John now in Three Lakes. Hi, John. What would you like to add to the conversation?
Hey, wages are just way too low across the board, and I feel like educates and politicians always want to focus on minimum wage. Our grandparents' generation wanted our parents' generation to make more money and have a better life than them. Our parents' generations have lost the insight to how much stuff has cost, the increase of cost has gone up over the years. So I agree with Susie 100% that legislating this from Washington and trying to make 15 across the board is not the correct idea. But I do 100%, and you can show people if you just show people the cost of living increase, housing cost increase, cost of everything, that wages in general are not enough. And some of these companies have to understand that when you voluntarily raise your pay, you will attract more intelligent workers. And in turn, they will save you money and make you more money. And that's something that our grandparents' generation understood. And the generation of employers these days have lost.
John, thank you. Tim, it sounds like you are on the same page there.
I am. I'm exactly on that same page with John. And, okay, so the state should deal with it, but 7.25 seems abysmally low. Not to mention the fact that we have the lowest tippable minimum wage in the country. We're at $2.13. That's what you get if you work in an establishment that gathers tips. The supposedly you make enough tips to make up for that 7.25 an hour. And in some states, if you don't have enough tips, the employer is forced to make it up. But I think we could and should have a modest increase in the minimum wage in Wisconsin and nationwide, not to $15. We're on the same page. I hear you in the libraries. I hear you in rural Wisconsin. But we can all absorb a little bit more. And just as John said, you're more likely to get better workers. Workers will stay with you, will be more flexible, and so on.
What is going on, Tim, with the sub-minimum wage that is allowable in, you mentioned their tips, allowed in the restaurant industry and retail. It's even allowed in higher ed. In Wisconsin, that amount is $2.33 an hour. What's going on there?
Yeah. Well, that's just the way that, you know, that a lot of states look at it. Some states have a sub-minimum wage, although it's higher, for teenagers. But there's two issues with the sub-minimum wage. The first issue is tippable wages, okay? And do people, in fact, pay enough tips? Now, what employers have done is they've said, well, we're going to share tips across everybody. So even the good news is that the people who are washing dishes in the back and cleaning tables and so forth, they get tips, but do they get enough tips to make up for the difference between 7.25 and 2.33? And that's a very debatable thing, and I'm not sure they do. Of course, if you work at a high-end restaurant, you do make that up, okay? The other thing is that the sub-minimum wage also applies to individuals with a physical or mental disability, so-called sheltered pay workshops. And what the National Civil Rights Commission found is that employers take advantage of those disabled people who are working there in those situations. And so there's been a bill passed in the House, yet you have to pay disabled workers the regular minimum wage and not take advantage of them by paying them something like $3 or $4 an hour. So that seems to me to be a reasonable thing to do.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about the federal minimum wage with Tim Smeeding. He's an economist. President Biden has said raising the federal minimum wage to $15 an hour would lift low-wage workers out of poverty. And we're seeing what you think about this. Lori is joining us from Shawano. Hi, Lori. Go ahead.
Hi. Every time there's any mention of a higher wage, minimum wage, everybody gets all crazy and starts screaming, especially Republicans and businesses, start screaming about, oh, the prices of everything are going to go up. Do people really think that the same prices that they paid back in 2009 are what they're paying now? Because that in that time, these businesses have raised their prices for goods and services a lot. I remember when the gas prices went up, I was living in Chicago, and there was a problem with the cabs. They were saying, we need to raise our cab fee $1 because of these gas prices. Well, that never went down, and that's what I'm finding now, that prices are going up, but the wages aren't going up.
Tim, do you see that as well?
To some extent, at the very bottom end, of course. Well, what's happened in this country over the past 20 years, let's say, is that the price of some goods has gone up much higher than incomes or wages. Education costs and childcare costs, for instance, are one. Another one is the cost of housing. And another one, obviously, is the cost of medical care. All of those costs are going up faster than people's incomes. And depending on who and where you are, you get hit differently. And I do think that if you want people to make a living and to come to work and to stay with you and get them out of the informal economy, for instance, where, you know, they just get paid in cash, a higher minimum wage is a way to help people at the very bottom. Now, I will say one thing, though. I should say this. Suppose that one of the costs that's rising is the cost of education. And this includes the cost of childcare. Childcare workers don't make $15 an hour. They make much less. They make $10, $11 an hour. And if we raise the minimum wage, they make a little bit more. Now, that might raise the cost of childcare by a little. But workers would be able to pay more childcare if that's what they needed because they'd be making more. And so there are margins, there are adjustments, but the adjustments aren't that great. And I agree that, yes, costs have gone up. 7 and a quarter an hour, 11 years ago. Just think, how much would you work and how hard would you work for 7 and a quarter an hour? I don't care where you are in Wisconsin. 7 and a quarter an hour. That seems to me to be incredibly low. 10, 11 bucks an hour, that's, you know, a 30 or 50% wage increase if you got to $11 an hour for someone making 7 and a quarter.
Let's bring in another voice on this. Matt in Madison is looking for solutions. Matt, go ahead.
Hey, I'm just wondering, this $15 an hour seems kind of like a Band-Aid on top of something that's really a systematic problem. Our wages have really been depressed by offshoring and things like that for a long time now, and I think they really need to come up. Prices probably are artificially low because of all of that, and things probably should come up. You know, people talk about the dairy farms. Well, they've consolidated so much. We got to do something about monopolies and offshoring to things like this. I know that this will help people out, but we need to do something more systematic to get things a little better to diversify our economy, I think. Thanks.
Matt, thank you. Tim, what do you think about sending jobs offshore and that is causing us to pay much lower prices for things?
Well, the good news is that if we are importing things from offshore, generally the quality is high and the prices are somewhat lower than if we produce them here, but then incomes fall here. Now, one of the original reasons for the minimum wage was to help bolster wage workers who were being taken advantage of by monopsonists, by large only firm in town places, and to decrease the difference between working people. So they're set to protect working people. Now, for the more general problem of foreign trade, on the whole, and this is the hard thing, on average, of course, people aren't average. When we increase trade, our export industries grow, so people, our milk and dairy products, to the extent they can be sold in Canada and Mexico and elsewhere, that bolsters demand for those products. And those firms are better off, okay? It may reduce prices for things we import, and those people who used to work in those industries can lose their jobs to some extent. But what we were supposed to do is to protect those who lost their jobs, to give them a chance at a new livelihood, to give them some training so that they can go to work somewhere else in a more productive sector. That's the way the economy is supposed to work, but that last part never happens.
We're talking with Tim Smeeding, professor of public affairs and economics at UW-Madison. He's explaining what a hike in the minimum wage would mean for low-wage workers, especially frontline workers in the pandemic. Do you work at a grocery store, a retail business, a restaurant? What have your wages been like over the past decade? Did you start at the minimum wage? Do your wages come mostly through tips? Has your wage kept pace with inflation? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation on the federal minimum wage with UW-Madison economist Tim Smeeding. The nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office, they published a study in 2019. We've been referencing it this hour. It found raising the federal minimum wage to $15 an hour by 2025 could cost 1.3 million workers their jobs. The study, it also found the higher wage could lift more than a million people out of poverty. What do you recommend? Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. Tim's meeting with us for about 10 more minutes. Tim, can we talk about Walmart for a moment, our country's largest private employer? They start workers at $11 an hour. They've said in a statement that they support these efforts to raise the minimum wage. You know, Target, Amazon, people in their ilk, they've also raised their starting wages. Why would large employers want to hike in the minimum wage, and where do they stand in the stake?
Large employers, I believe, need a steady workforce. They don't, it's very high cost to have a lot of turnover. There's a lot of things that you learn on the job that you have to relearn. So there's this idea of what we call efficiency wages. And those firms that you mentioned are very profitable. They can afford to pay a little bit higher wages. They get less turnover and they get more productive workers. So that's why they're willing to do it. Now, what would really be a good thing to do would be to take firms who increased wages for their employees, all their employees, not just the minimum wage employees, and give them a tax break versus those who go out and buy machinery for which they definitely get a tax break. So in other words, I think a lot of the larger companies, which have pretty big profit margins, are losing more in terms of turnover and in terms of not having a workforce that's willing to work harder and stay with them unless they pay a higher wage. And that's why places like Amazon and Walmart and a number of other employers are starting people at wages above the minimum wage and then moving them up towards 15.
Will this push some businesses, big and small, to just doing more automation, more self-checkouts, more auto-filling boxes in factories, other ways to reduce payroll?
Yes, they will. But the workers who stay will be working with those machines. Mm. And those workers will be much more productive and they'll get paid more. I mean, that's what's happening. Employment in manufacturing in this country has been falling for 25 or 30 years. We're doing okay in the recovery now. But increasingly, people are using robotics. Increasingly, people are using labor-saving devices. But the labor that has to work with those devices has to be more skilled. And so if you have fewer, more skilled workers who make more money, those workers will be better off and products will be better. And prices will stay fairly, or excuse me, should stay lower. So it's a complicated thing to look at the whole circle of the economy. But I think that a number of large firms see this as an important way to attract labor and keep labor.
Jim is here from Freedom with thoughts on the minimum wage. Jim, go ahead.
First of all, I'd say we should be raising minimum wage, but we have to do it slow and methodically because there are a lot of people that are under contracts for a year. And if they all of a sudden have to have their employees from maybe $10 an hour to $15, it's going to have a major impact on these companies. Second, if we're going to increase minimum wage, we have to go to fair trade with other countries. It's not right that the United States has to make, manufacturers in the United States have to make stuff so environmentally a certain way, and other countries can make it with no regard to environment at all. By doing this, we'll force other countries to clean up their environmental act, and their costs will go up, and it'll bring more jobs back to the United States. Because a lot of big businesses back in the 70s and 80s left the country because of our environmental laws, because they knew they could go into Mexico and pollute like crazy and make a product. Right here in Wisconsin, you have a product that used to be made in Wisconsin is now made in China. It's Milwaukee Tools. Why? Because they could get it cheaper. So we have to put wage requirements and environmental laws so these companies will realize they can't just jump across the border and pollute. We should say, if you want to make a product there, you have to make it as clean as we have to.
Jim,
that way, they don't think twice about it. And it does come to wages, because when you do that, it'll force these countries to stay here, and all of a sudden they'll see more products made here and more good jobs in this country.
Thank you. I'm going to jump in here. Jim, linking this to climate change, Tim.
Yeah, no, I think Jim's got a good point here. I think, you know, first of all, no one's talking about jumping to $15 tomorrow. They're talking about 5 or 6 years. And every wage increase that there is, every minimum wage increase, including Minnesota and Illinois and Michigan, is phased in over time. Okay. And we're off on a different topic on foreign trade, but I do think holding other countries to higher standards in terms of what they do to the environment and in terms of how they treat their workers is very important. I spent 3 years on the product licensing committee at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and we will not buy shirts or caps or sweaters with the UW logo on it unless the country that's making them is paying a decent wage and they're paying their workers and so forth. So there are some standards out there being by some buyers like the University of Wisconsin-Madison that are being enforced. So I think he's got a good point.
Tim Smeeting. Go ahead, Tim.
A more general one is, you know, there's a lot of decisions on a minimum wage. How high do you go? How fast do you get there? After you get there, do you increase it because other wages or prices go up and so forth? So all those things are part of the design, and they're part of the design in every country and in every increase. So there are ways of safeguarding things so that we don't abruptly hurt people who have contracts and so forth, but also they're able to hire workers who stay with them longer and do a better job.
So Tim Smeeting, with your economics hat on, if you could wave that magic wand in Wisconsin, what do you want to see happen?
I'd like to see us pass a plan that went from $7.25 to maybe $10 or $11 over 4 years. $7.25 to maybe $8.25 the first year, $9.25, and then maybe to $10.25 in 3 years, something like that, maybe even 11 in 4 years. And be careful about the way that works in terms of how it affects jobs and employers, but also look at the way that it affects workers and how many more workers you get, how much more likely you are to keep those workers and so forth. So I'm not for 15 in Wisconsin, but I am for something like 10 or 11. And I do think that that's something that's important. And if people out there who've talked have said that it should be a state decision, okay. But a 7.25 is just too little, in my opinion.
So slow, methodical, incremental, raising it. What would quality of life be like in Wisconsin very quickly here?
Well, it would work better. People would be more willing to work more hours and more flexibility. The people at the bottom who are below the poverty line would be better off. We'd save money on targeted programs. And I think that's all good. Reduce turnover in industries. And I think the state would be better off and we do a better job in fighting poverty and in reducing inequality if we did that.
Tim, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Kate.
Tim Smeeting is the Lee Rainwater Distinguished Professor of Public Affairs and Economics at the UW La Follette School of Public Affairs at UW-Madison. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.